From my radio tower, I can see my town from here. Through every fall, it's snowflake. It's about the time that... Good evening, my beloved Trina, my Kalinka. I wish to lighten our hearts this evening. We have new word from the hospital in Baro. We only know, dear comrades, that our beloved Mr. Schimmel, Mrs. Schimmel, and Mike Thunder are together there. So what may I say? What may soothe our troubled souls when they are so vexed over the well-being of people we love? Let me tell you this story. Once upon the time, there was old men and old women with two unmarried daughters. The elder daughter was, as the good book says, with tired eyes. Not especially attractive. But on the other hand, her younger sister Nastya was so very beautiful that any man who come to court the older sister immediately fall in love with the younger sister, enchanting Nastya. Well, the old mother has wicked heart toward Nastya. She tells her husband, take Nastya into the deep winter woods and leave her there to die. If you can imagine. Well, the little animals of the forest loved this young maiden and they cared for her. They cared, that is, for her. And shared some food and best places to shelter with her. Meanwhile, all of this did not escape the attention of the keeper of the winter woods. Did you know? He was our own Mr. Frost. The animals loved their shepherd and they led him to Nastya. Mr. Frost brought the young maiden back to her home where he scolded the mother and father. They said, what you do? Are you going to freeze us into statues? By no means. But you, with your cold hearts, have frozen yourselves. And from that moment on, this mama and papa became frozen people in front yard of their house. And the two sisters loved one another and enjoyed home together for a good long while. This is not end of story, sadly. The elder sister remained always sad that she may never know love. Her name was Maxine. One day while Nastya was away at market, group of men, robbers and thieves, they come and steal away Maxine and sell her into slavery. But as Rudyard Kipling has often said, that is another story for another time.
So let me get this straight, Mikey. You're a serious radio guy, like a disc jockey or something.
I'm exactly that, Joe.
Good gosh, I can hear it. I hear it for certain. It's like you don't even gotta turn it on to anything. I guess you special people are just born for what you do.
Maybe you're right, my friend. What is it that you're born to do, Joe?
Director's notes. Across the dashboard and through the windshield of a Crown Victoria sedan, we're turning off the street into a parking lot. Faint, foggy parking lights are scattered across it, and snow falls sparsely. Through the fog, the glaring red neon emergency room sign beckons. We have arrived at the Memorial Hospital in Barrow, Alaska. Now that we have come to the front of the building, we can also see the main entrance. We pull up and park right on the curb. Obviously, the driver does not worry about infractions or the possibility of being towed. The camera pulls back, and a darkly cloaked man absent-mindedly kicks the car door shut. His sense of urgency to be inside the hospital, rather than to properly park his car, excites the air around him like an aura. The mystery man approaches the reception desk, where a youngish, inebriate woman welcomes him. Not with words, but by removing the pencil from her mouth and pointing, indicating for him to go down the hallway to her right. Director's notes. The man has come to a cluster of ICU rooms. It is quiet and mostly empty. In a small waiting area sit two men. It is difficult to discern whether they are each resting from stress or quietly mourning. One of them suddenly heaves with emotion. The other man quietly rises, goes to the other, and sits next to him, placing a hand of solace upon his back. The mystery man takes this in and proceeds into a particular room. The two men exchange brief eye contact, and then both let their heads droop once again. Within the ICU room, there is the patient, unconscious but laboring for each breath. There is also the attending physician.
Are you the detective out of Fairbanks?
I'm Smith.
Smith indicates the patient and listlessly comments to the doctor.
Sounds awful.
We're preparing to intubate.
Prognosis?
We're doing everything we can, but whoever inflicted this brutality upon the subject, obviously it was deliberate, with the intention that the patient would not survive. The prognosis is not favorable.
The detective grunted. Perhaps it was the lateness of the hour and the duress of the event, but for a moment, it sounded to the doctor as if the other man had uttered the word,
"Perfect."
The doctor did a double take, but since there was no sign from the detective of having made any comment, the physician dismissed it as earwax.
Somewhere amidst the myriad peaked and valleyed majesty of Mount Arctos, Mr. Frost approaches the ice barrier prison in which he left the villainess Ginger just months before. Something sizzles in the atmosphere. Some immediate memory of wrong hangs in the air. Even from yards away, Mr. Frost can tell that the jail has been damaged. He knows that he will no longer find Ginger there. Still, he approaches solemnly and stands before the dark entrance of the shattered jail.
Maxine.
From within the cave comes the sound of a small dog growling and then giving one defiant bark.
Maxine, you must stop that. You're not a dog. You're a child. Oh yes, I know you were a young woman by the time this was done to you, but you were always a child, surviving amidst a stolen childhood. First by the hand of your mother, Yaga, and then by the molestations of those thieves and slavers.
The face of the small dog emerges just barely from shadow into light. Her warm green eyes exude a countenance of hope.
Yes, yes, see? It is I, you know me. The sundry animals of the winter wood all know me. Once they led me to your sister, and I rescued her. Child, allow me to do so for you, even now.
Maxine springs toward Mr. Frost and bounds into his open arms. A swirl of crystalline light envelops them. She is restored to the child of long ago in the folds of Mr. Frost's luxurious fur mantle and robe.
Your theosis was stolen from you so long ago. I am taking you to a mystical place in which you will be able to continue that pursuit of goodness undisturbed. It's called the Oasis. Does that sound fun? Of course it does, my darling. Here we go.
Hi, y'all. I'm Sheriff Hazy.
And I'm Deputy Lazy.
Local Remedies is
packaged, processed, and overpriced.
One of its best secrets ever.
Blubber. That's right, blubber.
It soothes the skin.
It burns in an oil lamp.
It makes soap.
Margarine.
Picks up a good fish soup.
How about blubbersicles for them warm summer days?
And blubber has only one side effect.
For the initiate,
nausea. That's right. Voluminous retching.
And projectile vomiting.
But compared to all the side effect warnings given for most
the chum we put in our systems,
we can guarantee one thing.
Blubber.
It won't kill you. Available at Trading Post Sundries.
On 2nd Avenue in Tyna.
Spencer Davis Group or Chicago?
That's too hard, man.
You don't know the bands? Or you don't know what song they both recorded?
I know them both, Mikey. I just love them both. I have to side with the original, but I love the extended percussion that Chicago adds. When I get married, the missus and I are gonna samba, tango, and kick up our heels to every good percussion number any band can play.
You definitely know what you want, Schimmel. You definitely do. Okay, here's another. BJ Thomas or Blue Swede?
Now that's an easy one, Mikey. Thomas has a voice, no doubt about it. But come on! Ooga chucka, ooga chucka! Blue Swede, all the way. Hey, you think we can pull over here? I'm out of beef jerky and coffee.
You got it, my friend. But listen, before you go in, let's just hit pause for a second and have an important chat.
Yeah. Sure, Mikey.
I think we need to be honest before we cover any more miles together.
I think I know what this is about.
Joe, I'm no television super private eye, but from the time you joined me, there's been a Black Crown Victoria tailing us. And Schimmel, well, let me just ask, are you mixed up with that guy in some way?
I was, Mikey. I was. You know he's tailing you.
I know.
You do?
I do, Joe, and I even know why. Which is something that he himself doesn't know. You can count on it.
No, I don't think he does. He was tailing you and hired me to help so he could get some rest. But the more I did my job, the more I just kind of wanted to be a friend, get myself on your side of the equation.
Well, I kind of hope that was the situation, Joe, but I want to tell you something. I want to tell you why I know he's following me and what the guy who hired him wants at the end of the day. When I was just a boy growing up in New Orleans, my parents took me to Bay St. Louis, Mississippi to pick up a friend of the family and get them out of the area before a hurricane hit. We were late and got caught in the middle of it all. There was this man who rescued me, but both my parents died.
Jeez, Mikey, I have no words.
The man who rescued me seemed to know me, and it was like he was there just to rescue me for some reason or another. But here's the thing, and this is going to stretch your sensibilities beyond breaking.
I'm all ears.
That man, angel or man or whatever he was, he got me back to the authorities in New Orleans, but he took my soul.
You see now, I should have got my coffee and jerky first, Mikey. You're losing me here.
It was like the man separated me from my humanity. It was as if he and the child that I was left New Orleans together and left just the shell. I was raised in the system and I've been through so much, so many things and people that very well might have stolen my soul and that would have been that. But this man, he has been returning to me this last year and drawing me along on this journey.
What journey is that?
To the place where I will be reunited with my soul.
And Bob, the guy who's following you, what's he want then?
The guy who hired him wants to use him in order to be present at the moment when I would get my soul back and steal my soul forever.
I knew I wanted to be your friend, Mikey. You sitting in those bars, those dark corners, sulking and all. Nobody ever brings anything small into a bar.
Well, I'm glad, Mr. Schimmel, because I can really use one. But I wanted you to know exactly what you've signed on to.
Director's Notes. The setting is the same as where we last saw Nicholas before he opened an invisible door and vanished into the perpetual winter night. Only this time, it is Mr. Frost with little Maxine in his arms. He too reaches into thin air and opens a door. Camera angle. This time, we are allowed to come around to face the open door. We follow Mr. Frost through the door and at once are plunged into a hidden and mystical oasis. It is lush with warm mineral springs and green growing things everywhere. Mr. Frost sets down the little girl and gestures to another child, a little boy around her same age who is coming across a meadow to greet them. He is full of laughter and light, and at once Maxine decides they can be friends.
Maxine, this is Michelle. Be friends. Have fun, children.
If the little girl had any question as to what they would do, Michelle summed it up in two words as he took her by the hand.
Let's play.
I feel like a good song.